Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman, episode 11 of season 3. Things are starting to come in to an end already with season 3. We have a really cool featured artist today. It's in our continuing series of We'd Like to Hear More From or Would Have Liked to Have Heard More From, and it's going to be the Guess Who today.
Great group.
They weren't around long enough. Burton Cummings kind of, you know, went on his own and had a middling solo career, and talk all about Guess Who later on. Now that we have run down our Rock Hall inductees through the years, starting in 1986, right up to present day, 2021, and giving you our thoughts on them, we are continuing our segment of Two Should Get In. Frankie tells me one, and I'll give you one, that may or may not have been nominated, but we'd like to see get the call from the Rock Hall eventually or at long last. Frankie, who's yours?
Well, I'm going to go with what they called back then a supergroup. And if there was a true supergroup ever, of course, it was Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Keith Emerson from The Nice was one of the greatest keyboard players of all time. Greg Lake sang and played some guitars for King Crimson. And then finally, Carl Palmer of Atomic Rooster, who again was one of the greatest drummers of all time. In fact, he was one of the few rock drummers that nobody other than Buddy Rich would actually give a little bit of due to.
That's saying something, Buddy Rich.
That's saying a lot. They were truly a progressive rock band. They had one, count them one, top 40 record called From the Beginning that managed to get to number 39. However, on the album end of things, they had 9 gold albums, 7 that were top 20. And they sold worldwide about 48 million records.
I had no idea.
They basically took progressive rock from the kids' basement to stadium tours. They made classical music accessible for many who really had never experienced it that much. I know from my point of view, you know, the first time I heard a lot of Aaron Copland was by their versions. And, of course, it made me want to, you know, go and search it out more. They experimented with instruments, arrangements, and of course, they fired cannons at the audience, had a revolving piano at California Jam. Now, when I say revolving piano, it was end over end, not around, it was end over end. Almost killed Keith Emerson, but that's a story for another
day. That's rock and roll.
And they used, of course, for the drum solo, a rotating drum kit. And that's just to mention a few. Were they pretentious and over the top? Yeah, but that was the act. So I'm all for Emerson, Lake, and Palmer getting in.
Mine would be Chaka Khan. She's been nominated a number of times, and she had the guts to say in the mid-70s when she was recording down the hall from Stevie Wonder that she liked the song that Stevie wrote for her, but she wasn't going to record it.
Oh, wow.
So undaunted, Stevie said, okay, I'll write you another one. You know, Frankie, it turned out to be a top 5 hit for her, her first single release called Tell Me Something Good. That's how you began her career with Rufus. Now, I'm fine with her getting in on her own or with Rufus or both or whatever.
Sure.
Stay in Hollywood, I'm Every Woman, Through the Fire, I Feel for You, and just a ton of hits. I love Chaka Khan. What a voice.
Yeah, and she was, again, one of the mainstays of the early MTV generation. Had a lot of nice tunes like the ones you just mentioned, but fantastic talent.
To me, there's still a number of acts that are deserving to get in. I'd like to at least see some of them nominated.
Exactly.
All right, Frankie, concert calendar time. Jimmy Buffett's going to be at the Red Rocks outside of Denver. It's a really nice venue, that outside place. It's just beautiful, especially this time of year. Tomorrow night, the 7th and the 9th, Alanis Morissette will be at Blossom Music Center. Talk about another nice outdoor venue. This coming Wednesday, the next night, the 9th, Doobie Brothers and their 50th anniversary tour with Michael McDonald will play Blossom. Indigo Girls at Kane Park, really nice outdoor venue in Cleveland Heights on Thursday as well. Keep in mind, the Alan Parsons Live project scheduled for the MGM Northfield Center stage has been postponed, originally set for Friday the 17th. But Pat Benatar and husband Neil Giraldo will be at the MGM Northfield on Saturday the 18th. And Jimmy Buffett's Live in the Flipside Tour will be at Blossom toward the end of the month on Saturday the 25th. Must have proof of vaccination or negative test for COVID to enter the venue, but apparently things went very well, Frankie, a couple of weeks ago for the Maroon 5 concert held at Blossom when they had those requirements in place. One-Hit Wonder Time, Frankie. You'll like these. out of the in the same year, actually, same time of year, fall of 76 brought Stand Tall, which hit number 10 in the U.S. What'd you think of Burton Cummings' one and only big hit here in the States?
Yeah, that was just after they'd kind of tied things off with the Guess who we'll talk about a little later. And he had this huge hit and looked like he was on his way to, you know, big things happening. And then guess what? It didn't happen.
You would think he wrote or co-wrote most of those songs that were big hits for the Guess Who not too long ago. And followed up with a tune called I'm Scared, which only hit number 61 in the States. Didn't have another top 40 song here until 1981 with the big hit, You Saved My Soul. Remember that?
No.
It peaked at number 37. It spent 21 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100, peaking at number 10 in the early part of 1977. Number one in Canada, no surprise.
Yep.
And produced by star producer Richard Perry, who in the 70s was the producer to the stars. Carly Simon's big hit, the album No Secrets, Nielsen Schmielsen, Ringo Starr with his Photograph and You're 16, Barbara Streisand, Stony Inn. So Richard Perry produced that album, and which contained Stand Tall. You would think that he was off to a great start, and he was.
Oh, absolutely.
And just kind of like Guess Who? It was over.
Far before its time.
Far before its time. Starland Vocal Band. Afternoon Delight, we talked about this a little bit. It's one of those guilty pleasures. I truly disliked that song when it first came out. Hard for me to say I hate any song because I just turn it off or not listen to it, right?
Exactly.
Nobody's forcing you to listen to it. But as the years progressed, I kind of grew fond of it. At first, it was, I really like the end. And somebody would say, why? I said, because then it's over. But then I kind of got with the lyrics and but the harmonies at the end, and it just kind of had a cool sound to it. It was a singing duo, first known as Fat City, and they co-wrote the John Denver hit Take Me Home Country Roads.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. 4 Grammy nominations for this song, including Best New Artist, and guess who had their own TV show in the summer of 77?
Not another one.
The Starland Vocal Band.
I didn't remember that.
So the Starland Vocal Band had their own variety show in the summer of 77, and guess who was a writer and a regular on the show? David Letterman.
Wow.
So it's only on for 6 weeks that summer. The follow-up called California Day, remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Made it as high as number 66, and then the band broke up in 1981. Afternoon Delight featured in the films Anchorman and Good Will Hunting.
That's right.
Number one hit for them, summer of 76. I guess if you're only going to have one song, might as well be number one.
Yeah, it certainly was huge.
Kind of like Terry Jacks and Seasons in the Sun.
Exactly.
All right, Frankie, this week in rock history, September the 6th, 1968, Eric Clapton recorded his guitar part for the song While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Wow, that's a classic song, and very few people actually know that he had the solo in that one.
Didn't Paul McCartney play drums on that one when Ringo Starr had his short-lived departure from the band?
Exactly.
1969, James Brown announced he would no longer tour after July the following year. It sounds like Elton John. Tour's over. It's going to be over in a year, though.
Exactly.
In September, on the 6th, 1970, Jimi Hendrix gave his final live performance at the Love and Peace Festival in Puttgarten, Germany. He was found dead just 12 days later.
Oh, that's criminally shame.
Remember the Jerry Lewis Muscular Dystrophy Telethon?
Of course I do.
They had all kinds of acts, mostly B acts or C-list acts, but not this year. In 1972, September 6th, John and Yoko appeared on the Muscular Dystrophy MDA Telethon.
Wow, I don't remember that, but that must have been fun.
Remember Nicky Hopkins? He passed away at the age of 50 in 1994. He played with the Stones and Jeff Beck and the Beatles, The Who, Small Faces, etc. Nicky Hopkins, only 50 years old. 1997, an estimated 2.5 million people watched Elton John's reworked version of Candle in the Wind at the funeral of Princess Diana.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Recording of the song was released and went on to sell over 33 million copies for that single. Became the biggest selling song of all time in the States and the UK.
I didn't realize that, but wow.
2001, Earth, Wind, and Fire announced their sponsor for the new tour would be Viagra.
That makes sense.
And in 2006, Victor Willis, the policeman in The Village People, found himself in trouble with the law.
Oh, who knew?
He pleaded no contest to drug charges. I wonder if he had his policeman's outfit on at the time. Birthdays, Frankie. Joseph P. Kennedy was born 1888, the matriarch of the Kennedy family.
My God.
Wow. David Allen Coe, the singer, poet, songwriter, 1939.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Waters, we know him. Pink Floyd, absolutely. 1944. Dolores Riordan, she passed away in 2018, the lead singer of the Cranberries. That's some good music. You want to listen to something good from the 90s? That's it. Dolores Riordan of the Cranberries was born in 1971. And Pippa Middleton, sister of Kate.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yeah, the socialite and author in England, is 38 years old today.
All right.
As we trace the years 1967 to 82, we like to run down the top 10 singles and the number one albums from each year. We're up to 1974. We're kind of looking at the history of the 70s and a lot of one-hit wonders, some bubblegum, and some really good tunes in there, too.
Sure.
Let's run down the top 10 singles from 1974. Mac Davis with One Hell of a Woman. I knew that song, but I didn't know it did so well.
I never realized that.
But no. We did know about Benny and the Jets. That was number 9.
Of course.
The Streak was number 8. Remember that?
That kind of tells you what kind of year 74 was.
When you were graduating high school, the big songs were Midnight at the Oasis,
yep.
Billy Don't Be a Hero, The Streak. You couldn't get away from that. Luckily, Band on the Run was there too, but
yep.
Yikes.
Seasons in the Sun, I think, was around that time. Yep.
Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just before Night Chicago died and Kung Fu Fighting came out. All your favorites.
Absolutely.
Number 7 was TSOP, another big hit from the spring from the Philadelphia group MFSB, Mother, Father, Sister, Brother.
And that was very early on in the disco thing. In fact, I don't think we even called it disco then, but it turned out to be a pretty good song.
Another great instrumental.
Yeah, definitely. It has
some vocals at the end. Grand Funk Railroad, we were so happy to have Mark Farner as our special guest a few weeks back. The Locomotion, the Carole King song, you know, the song about the train.
Exactly.
That came in at number 6. Dancing Machine, the Jackson 5, number 5. They were still getting the hits in there, weren't they? Redbone, Come and Get Your Love, was number 4.
Yeah, the Native American group.
Group. One of our favorites, a Love's Theme by the Love Unlimited Orchestra. That's a band Barry White put together. Talk about somebody who is deserving for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's Barry White right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was number 3. Seasons in the Sun.
I just mentioned it.
Terry
yep.
Jacks used to be in the Poppy family, and we mentioned him. I think it was our very first episode of One Hit Wonders.
Right.
And songs that were maybe not so good either. That was number 2. The Way We Were, from that tear-jerking movie called, what was it called? I can't remember the name of it. Barbra Streisand, number 1 for the singles, 1974. So, you know, some top acts like Elton John, Grand Funk, Jackson 5, Barbra Streisand. You had some one-and-dones like Terry Jackson, even Redbone, and Mac Davis was still doing his variety show and whatnot.
Exactly.
And then you're kind of campy songs like The Streak and, you know, Seasons in the Sun a little bit, and even Love's Theme had its own little style, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned The Streak. One thing about the 60s and particularly the 70s, there were a lot of novelty songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we go into the years now, I can't remember the last time I heard one.
I can't either.
You know, and I know I really don't listen to popular music as much, but, you know, you can't miss a novelty song when it's hot, and really can't think of a whole lot.
Makes you long for the days of
Cheb Woolley, yeah, and the Purple People Eater.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, absolutely. You know, yeah, he had
Kip Adada.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those were some fun records, and, you know, you didn't want to listen to them all the time, but occasionally on the way to work, it brought a smile to your face.
Once in a while, the Curly Shuffle would come up.
Sure, absolutely.
But you'd be hard-pressed to find many these days. Back then, and not only that, it was like Campaign 72, where they would drop in little vignettes of other songs.
That's right, I remember that.
Of course, Troglodyte.
Yeah,
and My Ding-a-Ling, you know, stuff like that. It was fun to listen to, especially as a kid.
It was.
If you could sneak it into your bedroom and keep the volume down real low, right?
Absolutely.
Number one albums, 1974, and there were a bunch of them. You know, the way I like to buy or ask for albums when I was 13, 14 years old was to ask for the greatest hits package because I didn't have a ton of money to buy a lot of singles. But the Carpenters did the trick for me, the singles, 1969 to 74. That pretty much encompasses their whole career. They're all on there.
Yeah, there weren't too many after 74 that really did much. That was their peak right there.
That's about it. They did have another album or two out coming out in 75 with Please Mr. Postman and Love is Surrender and that kind of thing. Jim Croce and You Don't Mess Around with Jim, that album was released actually in the spring of 72, but spent 93 weeks on the charts, Billboard charts. That was by far the longest amount of time of any Jim Croce album. Had a bunch of hits on there, and some were released following his tragic death in September of 73. Bad Bad Leroy Brown coincided with his death pretty much in the summer of that year. But that spent 5 weeks at the top of the charts. About 2 years after it was released, You Don't Mess Around with Jim started off things along with the Carpenters in 1974. Planet Waves by Bob Dylan spent 4 weeks at the top of the charts, 1974.
Yeah, and I don't remember that was one of his big ones, but obviously it sold.
It did, yeah. Barbra Streisand spent 2 weeks at the top with the soundtrack to The Way We Were. John Denver's Greatest Hits. Paul McCartney and Wings, Band on the Run, great album.
That's a fantastic album, and that one actually, I think, was released in 73, and just kind of slowly built to where it got to be number one.
Yeah, it did. I thought it was released in early 74 because they had Jets,
yeah.
But actually Helen Wheels and later in 73, I should say. Chicago, another number one album of theirs. The final double album that they would release, Chicago 7. You know, I've been searching so long, calling me, wishing you were here.
Ah, great tunes.
Written by Peter Cetera. The Sting soundtrack, Marvin Hamlisch. 5 weeks at the top of the chart. That's another cool instrumental, The Entertainer.
Yeah, and boy, did it get played.
The Wings, again, and Band on the Run. Gordon Lightfoot into the summertime with Sundown. Then Elton John toward the latter part of the summer with Caribou. 4 weeks at the top of the charts.
That's right. He was as hot as he was ever going to be right there after Yellow Brick Road and Caribou. Wow.
Another John Denver, another big album of his, Back Home Again. That featured Thank God I'm a Country Boy, Back Home Again, and the number one song, Annie's Song.
Mm-hmm.
He was as hot as anybody in 74 and 5 and even 73.
Definitely.
And then the hits just kind of dried up, didn't they?
They sure did.
Eric Clapton's 461 Ocean Boulevard. We mentioned before that was at the Criteria Studios where they recorded in Miami. So many great albums. Stevie Wonder's Fulfilling This First Finale. That was one of those I got in my Columbia Record Club.
Yep, definitely.
First 13. Bad Company's debut. And the Beach Boys' Endless Summer, 1974.
Wow, that's incredible.
We're only like halfway done. If You Love Me, Let Me Know, Olivia Newton-John.
Okay.
Barry White's Can't Get Enough. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the greatest hits package so far.
Yep.
They'll be our featured artist next time around. Carole King, she just kept putting out great albums and great singles. This one was called Wrap Around Joy and featured Jazzman. Sure. John Lennon, Walls and Bridges, The Stones, It's Only Rock and Roll, and Elton John's Greatest Hits rounded out 1974 for 5 weeks at the top, and he would also start off 1975 with that same album, which I asked for Christmas. And you know what? I'm not sure I asked for Christmas. You know what I did, Frankie? I remember I asked for a Los Angeles Rams helmet. Because I was starting to get into helmet collecting
then. Yeah, it even back then, huh?
One of the mini helmets. It was the regular size helmet that a little kid would wear on the field. But it had the white ram horn back then. They had not gone to the yellow yet. But when I got it for Christmas, I asked my sister Mickey if it would be okay if I traded that in because I really wanted Elton John's Greatest Hits instead.
Oh,
and she said, sure, fine with me, you know. I said, yeah, I know. The album is so much easier to listen to on a turntable than putting a helmet on there. The stylus would get all messed up and everything.
Definitely.
1974, Frankie, I'm getting into this one. The best album covers, according to Frank Oss now. He have a couple of good ones this time around, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit different. Band by the name of Grand Funk Railroad that we all know.
Yeah.
And the album was Shining On. It was the one that came out right after We're an American Band. And I guess they were looking to maybe get a little edge in the market. But the front cover and gatefold featured pictures of the band in 3D. There was also a poster of the band inside, also in bivisual 3D. And the package included the 3D glasses, the red and blue 3D glasses, so you could actually view it.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That's Like I said, some of these packages are a little bit out of the ordinary.
Because where else would you get 3D glasses back then?
Exactly.
At Neisner's?
Yeah. It's one of the few records that I can remember that went the 3D way. The package also included a sheet that listed all their 1974 American tour dates. And, of course, information on joining the Grand Funk Railroad fan club.
Nice. You know, that was produced by Todd Rundgren.
Yeah, absolutely.
Second one in a row.
Yeah, that was him and a fun little album.
Did some good stuff on there.
Yeah, they did some good stuff. And I do like the song Shining On. It's a pretty good song.
That is, yeah. Good choice.
And the other one, boy, this was a band, and it's hard to believe that they were ever not known, but they were very little was known about a band called Kiss, it was their second album called Hotter Than Hell. The album is known for its striking cover. It features Japanese manga-influenced artwork, and the back cover showed each of the individual band members in shots taken by Norman Seth at a wild party, and a composite of all four band members and their makeup designs. Everyone present at the session was drunk for the entire photography session.
No kidding.
Yeah, Paul Stanley was so drunk that he had to be locked in his car afterwards for his own protection. Paul's drunken state can be easily seen on the album's front cover. It appears that Peter Criss is holding him up as he holds on to Peter's leg. The Japanese character on the bottom of the album cover is Chikira, which means power. Also, the Japanese characters used for Ace's name pronunciation is wrong. The character, which is actually something that would translate to Ace Fury, not Ace Freely. The back cover notes are in English and Japanese. Remember, this was only their second album, and they were still relatively unknown. They hadn't been seen without their masks. So the result was that the Japanese instantly took to the band and started writing cover stories about them in magazines there. Many people even suggested and suspected that they were Japanese and thought that they had been taken the makeup from Japanese kabuki theater.
Really?
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to remember back when Kiss was unknown, but still were back then.
Wow. What do you think? I know I probably asked this. What do you think about Kiss as a band overall? I know they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's probably when we mentioned them. We haven't talked a lot about Kiss.
No. And I was a little bit grown up for the whole Kiss thing when it came. It was kind of juvenile.
And yeah, the theatrics and all that.
I can't say it any other way than that I was probably a couple years older than their target audience, which was probably 14 or 15 at the time.
Yeah,
and I was more
right.
like 18, 19, 20.
So you're getting into more Jay Giles and that kind of
stuff. Yeah, I like
Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, or I like my Stones or something like that. And I wasn't really interested in the band that, you know, put face makeup on and did the whole thing. It just seemed to me a big gimmick. Which, of course, it was.
I didn't think they needed it. The music stood for itself. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Actually, it turned out that they had a heck of a career. And like you said, Rock and Roll Hall of Famers.
Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
So Download Discovery, Frankie, brand new segment of ours. We really like turning folks on to some different kind of music that weren't necessarily big hits. And we'd like to interest them. You can always... can certainly download some of these songs if you want or preview them on YouTube.
Oh, yeah,
what
absolutely.
You got for this week's Download Discovery, Frankie?
Well, band out of Britain, named after its leader.
Great
Brian,
Britain.
Exactly. Brian Auger's Oblivion Express. What a great name.
Yeah.
And probably their most well-known album, although none of them were that well-known, called Closer to It. Auger is the king of the Hammond B3 organ, let's put it that way. And the list of jazz and rock musicians he's played with is incredible. I went down the list and I was just amazed. But just to give you an idea, everyone from Judy Garland to Jeff Beck is on this list.
Wow.
His most popular album made with his most popular band, the Oblivion Express, was recorded in August of 1973, and it includes several original songs. But just as important are two big covers he does on there, one of Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues, and then the Eddie Harris Les McCann classic Compared to What, which we just featured a couple weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
All the tracks on the record are about 5 to 8 minutes long, letting the band really stretch out and do some wonderful soloing. It's jazz rock fusion, but there's still enough rock backbone to get occasional plays on rock stations back then. Absolutely perfect record to enjoy your favorite bottle of red wine.
Closer to It, the name of the album, Brian Auger and the Oblivion Express. Brian, as you mentioned, played with everybody, including the Yardbirds as a session musician on For Your Love. This will make my sister, Mickey, very happy. He played a huge role in the NBC airing of the TV show in 1969 called 33 and a Third Revolutions per Monkey.
I love it.
Starring the Monkees, Brian Auger played a huge role in that, but it also had some musical guests. Listen to these guests on 33 and a Third Revolutions per Monkey on NBC. Jerry Lee Lewis, Fats Domino, Little Richard, and the Clara Ward Singers.
Wow.
Yeah, not the Von Trapp Singers.
No.
But the Clara Ward Singers. For me, Make a Circuit with Me, Summer of 83. I was listening to some different stuff, alternative stuff, new wave for sure. This band came out of North London called the Pole Cats, not the Stray Cats, but it would remind you of the Stray Cats, or maybe even modern English back then. The rockabilly band formed in the late 70s, four-man group, had a nice little sound, little thing going there. They had a British producer and songwriter named Chris Hughes, who was the drummer for Adam and the Ants, and best known for putting together a little album called Songs from the Big Chair. From Tears for Fears. Remember Shout and
What a Fantastic
Everybody Wants
that
to Rule
is.
The World and Head Over Heels. He produced that album a few years later. Chris Hughes, a producer, also worked with Bon Jovi, Robert Plant, Paul McCartney, Peter Gabriel, Rick Ocasek, and one of your favorites, Wang Chung.
I'll be darned.
The song's a nice little up-tempo thing. Summer of 83, Make a Circuit with Me.
Great.
You can find that on YouTube for sure, and if you like it, download it. Same
Absolutely.
With Brian Auger. All right, Frankie, a continuing segment of ours, solo success or not. Some guys who left a prominent band or maybe after the band split up and went on to have solo success or not. This time around, Glenn Frey and Glenn Chirac. Glenn Frey, both of them were spelled with two N's, by the way.
Interesting.
Glenn and Glenn. But Glenn Chirac spelled his last name with two R's. And Frey, only one R. So that was the big difference there, other than the fact that Glenn Frey had a much better solo career after the Eagles were split up, were not getting along, so he and Don
Yeah, they'd get back together when hell freezes.
That's
over.
Right. So this was in the hell time. The One You Love, The Heat Is On, You Belong to the City, those are big hits for him. No number ones, but You Belong and The Heat Is On both went to number two. Smuggler's Blues, you know.
Smuggler's Blues, what a great video that was.
So he did well as a solo artist. We'll give him the thumbs up for that. The thumbs down has to go to Little River Band's Glenn Chirac.
After leaving I can't recall band, his... I can't recall my his career.
You remember, they had some really good tunes.
Oh, Little River Band, absolutely, yeah.
After leaving the band in 82, he failed to chart at all in the United States. He would return to the lineup in 1988 amid the Little River Band putting out two more solo albums in 1988 and 1990. I can't remember either one of them.
No.
I do remember a couple of hits they had with his replacement, John Farnham. But Glenn, it just wasn't working for Glenn Chirac, even though he rejoined the band, and Little River Band, I think the time had come and gone by then.
Quickly, yes.
Frankie, our featured artist, is in our continuing series, Bands We Wanted to Hear More From, the Guess Who, with a question mark. What'd you think of the Guess Who, the Canadian garage band?
Yeah, and I think the key there is Canadian, because where we live here in Cleveland, Ohio, one of the AM stations, and it was an AM station that we listened to when we were growing up, maybe as many as all the other stations here in town, was a station called CKLW, which was just over the border in Windsor, Ontario.
The Big 8.
And they used to play a whole lot of Guess Who.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always thought that the Guess Who was very far more popular than I think maybe they actually were.
The psychedelic pop group from Winnipeg, Manitoba had a bunch of hits from 68 to 75, and then it was over. Burton Cummings kind of pulled the plug and said, I want to be a solo artist. And we talked about his one and only hit here in the States. Began, though, in the mid-60s with Chad Allen and the Expressions and put out the album Shakin' All Over. Remember that one?
That's 1965? Right.
1965? Yeah, good tune. 1965 brought to the Expressions, and Randy Bachman was in the band at the time as his lead guitarist. Burton Cummings had not joined yet. The song did hit number one in Canada, number 22 in the States, Shaking All Over. I like that song.
Yeah, it's a great song, and one of those that was recorded by both The Who and The Guess Who, so it can confuse you totally.
The Who had no question mark after their name, but Question Mark and the Mysterians did. A lot of question marks back then.
Absolutely.
People didn't quite know what to do, I guess. Their American label, Guess Who's, Quality Records. Wanted to see if this group could get more publicity by renaming them Guess Who? With question mark, so that it would make it look like they were part of the British invasion. Then it just kind of stuck. You know, DJs found out about that little PR move, and they kept calling them Guess Who? And it stuck. However, Chad Allen did not stick around. Burton Cummings joined, and he left in 1966, returning to college, was replaced by 18-year-old lead singer Burton Cummings, who co-wrote, along with Randy Bachman, most of those big hits.
Yeah, and if you want to listen to, if you're not familiar with Guess Who, if you want to listen to a great rock and roll voice, that's Burton Cummings. He really can sing.
No doubt about it. They were then signed to the Nimbus 9 label in Canada, RCA Records outside of Canada. They changed their sound to more of a pop rock and jazz influence group, and then came out of the album in 1969 in March called Wheatfield Soul. Well, not a big seller here, but it did yield the first hit single, number 6 here in the States, called These Eyes.
Exactly.
So the album was, number 3 in Canada, only number 45 here. The first to be produced by Jack Richardson, who we'll talk about later, and his son. He would also produce the next 3 albums, so they were in good hands with Jack. 1969, in the fall of that year, Canned Wheat came out, had Laughing and Undone released as the two-sided record. Laughing, number 10 in the summer. Undone, which I like a little better, came out in the fall and hit number 22. So they were on their way, weren't they?
Yeah, and that, like you said, Undone is just a terrific little record.
Did you ever hear the Lenny Kravitz version of American Woman out in 1999? It's a good little rocker, isn't it?
Absolutely,
I like Lenny Kravitz. The Guess Who version was released in January of 1970. And it was released in stereophonic and quadraphonic and 8-track tapes.
Nice.
Peaked at number 9 here in the States, so they are gaining some traction. American Woman, backed with No Sugar Tonight, kind of like CCR, B-sided hits, number 1.
Exactly.
But it was the last to feature guitarist and songwriter, Randy Bachman.
And I think that kind of sowed the beginnings to the end, because I think up until then they had a really nice thing going with a little interplay between Bachman and Cummings. And when they lost that, maybe they lost a little bit of the personality.
A little bit of the edge. No Time was another single, number 5 that year in June of 70. So they wasted no time following it up. Just 5 months later, Share the Land, which featured Hand Me Down World. It was the first single. Followed by Share the Land, the title cut in September. New lead guitarist Keith Winter started writing songs, you know, along with Burton Cummings, and
right.
Share the Land was a top 10 hit in the fall. So, but you're right.
Good tune, yeah.
They still had some songs. They had a surprise hit, Clap for the Wolfman, in 1974.
I think that was one of their last ones. But yeah, and they had some interesting tunes like Hang On to Yourself. I remember that one. And I also remember Rain Dance was
Rain Dance, 71.
Very.
Albert Fleischer was a good tune.
Yep, exactly.
Hand Me Down World. The album in 1970 sold real well. By the way, the album was released in a new type of vinyl, Frankie, called Dynaflex.
Oh,
really? You could fold it in half, and then it would pop back into shape.
Wow. I could have used that.
I hope nobody really invested in Dynaflex stock, though.
No.
I think it lasted. Rain Dance was such a cool song in the summer of 71. It hit number 19 here. Top 5 in Canada. They always did well in Canada. 1972 came Rockin', which featured a couple of singles called Heartbroken Bopper and Guns, Guns, Guns. So not exactly cool tunes like Albert Fleischer or Laughing or Undone.
Exactly.
Or American Woman. No Sugar Tonight. You know, Guns, 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 Heartbroken Bopper. They sound like B-sides without an A-side.
Exactly.
Now, Live album came out Live at the Paramount, which had only 7 cuts on it, but it did have a 17-minute-long song, which began one of the sides, of American Woman.
Sounds like an awful lot of American Woman.
Like, why did they do that? Two more albums followed. Neither one sold very well. In the spring of 74, that comeback, Road Food, which has one of my favorites, Star Baby, which had number 39.
Yeah, that's a neat song.
Spring, yeah, in the States. Got a lot of airplay, especially in Chicago and on CKLW.
Absolutely.
And over here, it'd be Wixie. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was listening to G98 yet, but WLYT and G98, they were certainly big hits stations in Cleveland back then. Clap for the Wolfman was that surprise hit, you know, featured Wolfman Jack and did very well here. Then people thought, guess who might be back? And Dancin' Fool came out as a follow-up in late fall, and then it was over.
Yeah, it definitely was over.
Burton Cummings left the group, started his own solo career after 10 years with the band, had that big hit, and then, you know, also provided some backing vocals to the Eric Carmen album, Boats Against the Current.
Oh, I never realized that.
Either. Burton released 8 solo albums and sold much better in Canada. He also tried acting in a couple of films and did some soundtrack work for a few movies as well. But his solo career never really amounted to much here in the States.
No.
He did reunite with bandmates Jim Cale and Gary Peterson in 2000. They toured for a few years, then Burton got together with former bandmate Randy Bachman for the Bachman Cummings Band. Remember that?
No.
I don't remember.
But a little late.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
They did perform songs from the Guess Who and BTO and Burton's solo career, for what it's worth. Now, he was inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in 2016. Also presented, Burton was, with the Officer of the Order of Canada, which is a very prestigious honor indeed, one of the country's highest civilian honors. And Burton Cummings and Randy Bachman were at the Goodyear Theater in Akron just late last month. Producer Jack Richardson, who we mentioned, also worked with Bob Seger on his Night Moves album and a couple of Alice Cooper albums. And the big hit song from the Irish Rovers, Wasn't That a Party?
Talk about a
cool, campy song, right?
Absolutely.
Jack's son, Garth Richardson, has carried on the success of the family, working with artists of today like Rage Against the Machine, Motley Crue, Nickelback, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So the Richardson family is well-attended. So that's the Guess Who, Frankie. They kind of got up and got down and they had a bunch of good hits, though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And it would have been interesting if Randy Bachman had stayed in the band. And, you know, you had to figure that some of those hits that he had with Bachman Turner Overdrive would have been Guess Who hits, you know.
Yeah, you would think.
There was so much potential there. And it's just one of those sad things that they couldn't make it work and ended up with two bands that kind of fizzled, both of them, about the same time.
BTO is going to be in our continuing series of bands we wanted to hear more from. They really started off great with those two albums.
Sure.
And then it just kind of fizzled quickly for them, didn't it?
Absolutely.
Do you think either one will ever get a nod for the Rock Hall, especially the Guess Who?
I don't know, but I'd go to war for the Guess Who. I think they're as willing, you know, as just about anybody else that's already been in. You know, there are a lot of groups that don't have the 10 years that they had, let's put it that way.
Yeah, they were a good band. I liked them a lot. All their tunes I'll still listen to, and you can give me the A or B side, and I'm happy either way.
Absolutely.
Next time around, we'll hit a new segment called Southern Rock, Southern Folk. We'll talk about Poco and Pure Prairie League, Allman Brothers, Skinnerd, Firefall, maybe even one of your favorite bands, 38 Special.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Next time around, though, we're going to talk about one of the best, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And Young. That's our featured artist next time around. We hope you join us. Thanks for joining me, Frankie.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations.